Welcome to the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Tim Burrows. Today, a catch-up from Mumbrella 360, where our keynote interview was CommBank Chief Marketing Officer Andy Lark. Let me tell you about Andy Lark, Chief Marketing Officer at Commonwealth Bank. Andy's got a pretty interesting background for us as an audience. He's been through the agency side, including through PR at Fleischmann Hillard. He's had some big jobs, including Sun Microsystems, a global role at Dell, and he's worked in various parts of the world, including at the US in London, and most recently here in Australia. So please welcome Andy. Now, Andy, probably a good place to start. You've been in Australia for
8 months,
a year.
About 8 months, nine months. Yeah.
What were your first impressions when you got here of the media market?
My first impression was that I was just lucky to be here. I spent the last, 15 years in the US and travelling the world and living in all over the planet, spending half my time in China recently. I generally don't think most Australians realise how lucky they are. Like, this right now is the lucky country, right? I mean, aside from just being ridiculously good to live here, economically it's great, society's great, vibrant arts, vibrant everything. It's just amazing down here. So yeah, I love it. It's probably got more media than it needs, to your question. I mean, there's no shortage of people with opinions, but and that's good, right? That's part of the vibrancy. So yeah, it's quite astounding just how fast everything is evolving down here.
And when you looked at the quality of the marketing scene generally, the marketing that you looked at from other people, what did you think?
I looked across the market, and there's a lot of great marketing that goes on here, frankly, against the odds, right? And when I get out and talk to market, I mean, I was asked a couple of days ago, who do I rate as marketers in Australia? Who do I think is the best marketer in Australia?
And who is that?
I think the guys at Tourism Australia are pretty remarkable at what they do as a government-sponsored institution. And the idiocy of the commentary on their latest campaign, it's like, does no one understand that China is it? Like, that is going to be your biggest market pretty soon of tourists, and they're onto it, and it's not like they wake up in the morning and go, yeah, I guess we should target China, you know? Like, they actually did a shitload of research and have data and built a strategy and did research, and it's like, oh, you know, the assumption is we don't think they did any of that. So back to your original question, I think that Australia has a large number of really remarkable marketers, including a lot of my competitors, who are performing against the odds, against, a reasonably cynical, bitchy, whiny environment. You know, and I really admire them for that.
Now, we will talk about your new campaign shortly. One of the first things you began to do when you got here was look at your agencies. Now, you eventually cut Goodby Silverstein. You gave a role to MNC Saatchi. Now, those are both big moves, big responsibilities. Goodby's had this dream of opening a big agency in Australia. MNC were probably relying on you for jobs. It's a lot of responsibility. Do you actually take it seriously?
Oh, no, I don't. No, just, yeah. It's all about lunches for me. Look, I think the
role... You know someone's going to tweet just that.
Yeah. I know. You just can't win. Look, at the end of the day, I think the role of the CMO is vastly overstated. Vastly overstated. I mean, I have a fantastic group of people that I'm lucky enough to work with, and I listened to them. I did not walk into that job going, right, number one, change agencies. You know, number two, change the brand, launch big campaign. That was not my goal. In fact, one of the things that attracted me to the job was Goodby, because I've lived the last 15 years in the US. My wife's American. We go back to the US a lot. And I was like, well, that's kind of convenient. I'll be able to go to San Francisco for business. Awesome. But as I listened to my team was saying to me, we're really not happy with the way this works, and we really are concerned about where the brand is at, and we think the goals we originally set out to achieve actually largely have now been achieved. We need to open a new chapter. And so as we looked at the data and made decisions and looked at the economics of what we were doing and really looked at the data, we sort of concluded it was time to make a change. Now, the thing I would say is that there's no reflection on the creative work that Goodby did. I mean, I know, and I had nothing to do with it, and I think that, you know, largely it's pretty good work, and it achieved its commercial goals, which we often forget as marketers, right? We don't make ads because it's cool to make ads. We make ads to sell more products. And so largely achieved all its commercial goals. And they were contenders right down to the final round. So, you know, we might have actually chosen them, but M&C really came through with a brilliant idea and campaign. So,
now you have worked agency side.
Yeah.
In your experience, why do agencies lose clients?
Oh, look, it's really, I don't know how many people here are from agencies, but it's really, really simple. Go back to your office and say, pull me the customer satisfaction data from our large five largest clients for the last 3 months. They won't be able to do it. They, as an agency person, you're taught to sell at every opportunity. Transmit how awesome you are at every opportunity. And if I look at our best agency, I mean, the M&C relationship's young. Our best agency relationship is probably Icon Media Buying. They're absolutely bloody fantastic, right? And the interesting thing is there, when Pat and those guys phone me up and say, let's go out for lunch, I'm kind of like, oh, God. And I'm, oh, God, because not because they're going to pitch and sell me. They will interrogate me. Like, how are we doing? How good are we? We're looking at the customer service stat. And they've adopted our same customer service methodology, which means the only acceptable score is 9 out of 10 or 10 out of 10. 7s and 8s are for losers, right? And so that is a different attitude to a client relationship and gives you a bi-weekly and monthly pulse of how your relationship's going, not just with the CMO, who, as I said, role's largely overstated, but also with other stakeholders in the business, the people down in the rank and file, the marketing leadership team. You have got a pulse on how well you're doing, right? And there are very few agencies out there that have any kind of systematic way of comprehending their customer service performance. We need a Canstar or a Roy Morgan for the industry.
What do you look for in an agency?
Oh, look, there are some mechanical things you go look for around efficiency, productivity, because a lot of the work you do is transactional volume work. And then you're obviously looking at their ability to bring insights and the strategy to life. And I really think too many clients outsource that to somebody else rather than saying, no, we have to own the strategy and the insight, and then we have to find the very best creative partner we can to shine a spotlight on that. And I think, for instance, that's what Tourism Australia has done so well. Okay. Built the insight, built the strategy, found great creative, works well.
Well, let's talk about the move to the Cannes campaign. And before we get into the conversation, this is probably a good chance to look at how it all began, which was the ad with Toni Collette. So let's play that now, please.
There's a four-letter word, as offensive as any. It holds back the few, puts a stop to the many. You can't climb that mountain, you can't cross the sea, you can't become anything you want to be. You can't hit a century, they can't find a cure. She can't think about leaving or searching for more. Because can't is a word with the habit of stopping the ebb and flow of ideas. It keeps dropping itself where we know in our hearts it's not needed and saying don't go when we could have succeeded. But those four little letters that end with a T, they can change in an instant when shortened to three. We can take off the T, we can do it today. We can move forward, not back. We can find our own way. We can build, we can run, we can follow the sun, we can push, we can pull. We can say, I'm someone who refuses to believe that life can't be better with the removal of one insignificant letter.
About the process that got us there?
So we started out with one of the biggest pieces of research the bank's done, and the brand team did a fantastic job working with a group of guys called Strategy First out of the US. They're ex-CMOs of Coke and Procter & Gamble, so they know the business side as well as the brand strategy side. And we did this enormous piece of research, and what we learned through that research was just absolutely intriguing, because we weren't looking at what people thought was important in a brand, but we were looking at that alongside the things that motivated them. Like, what would attract you to do something, right? And learned a whole lot of fascinating things through that. And that resulted in a set of core brand insights that really centered around this notion of, I really want a financial partner that's going to help me move forward in my life. Now, you don't move me forward in my life. We heard that time and time again. But you help me. And at every single point of my journey in life, I turn to my financial institution for help. And I normally get a new one or change my existing one where they're not there to help me. And, you know, you get married, you go see your bank, you know, you buy your first car, you go to university, you engage, right? And as we looked more and more into that insight, and particularly middle Australia, we heard time and time again, this big theme that came through was that we are so sick and tired of your banks talking about each other. We're so sick of the negativity. We're sick and tired of everyone thinking they have to stand on everyone else's shoulders to be good.
You think of NAB and the breakup in particular?
No, I think NAB was actually probably on strategy. You know, they're the fourth largest bank in Australia, going strong. I mean, I'm not sure I would have done that strategy myself. And I've seen that strategy done many, many times overseas, and including some of the ideas they implement. And that's fine too. They deserve huge credit for a really good campaign. So I hope it worked for them, and I hope they feel they got the business outcomes they sought. So good for them. But it's more the whole industry switches into that mode of like seeking to tear each other's hearts out at every opportunity, as opposing to inspiring the hearts and minds of the customers we're seeking to serve. The other thing we discovered was that there was this real thing in Australia, middle Australia, around, holy shit, what's going to happen next? You know, I kind of feel good about where I'm at in life, but this bloody Europe thing seems to be imploding, and you listen to the politicians for 2 minutes, the world's going to end next week, and they kept saying to us, we're looking for we want leadership from our largest financial institution. You are not a contender brand. And when we showed them, we had some versions of the campaign that were quite negative. And the people the hundreds of people we showed the work was like, oh, that's awful, don't go there. You don't need to go there. So it was informed a lot by research, and the core insight was around this notion of how do I move forward in my life, yeah.
Now, a simple word like that, you know, a time like this where everyone's speculating, are the banks going to pass along the biggest rate cut? Anyone who doesn't, it makes it very easy to turn that headline back to can't.
Oh, yeah, but no brand is built through a single lens. No brand is built off the back of a single event, right? You know, does ANZ live in your world? You've seen them lurking about lately? Oh, come on. I mean, you know, is NAB always fair? Probably not, but they work bloody hard at it. Look, people are not as black and white as the serial opinionators out there would have us believe. And we know from time to time that we're not going to be able to do something for a customer. That is not the point of the word. The point of the word is that even if I'm unable to give you that loan you want or, you know, do whatever you want to do right now, I can get you on a journey to get there. I can help you get a financial plan in place. I can do a financial health check. How many of you have done a financial health check? You spend all, one person. Shit, you spend your life working for money. And you don't do it, and you go to the doctor only when you're sick, right? So that's a good indicator of how much we care about our health. And yet, very few of us take the time to do a bloody financial health check.
And so had you done a financial health check before you joined Combank?
No, I'm bloody useless. I was hopeless. But when I did it, the guy was like, you need to grow up. Look what you spend your money on. And look, you know, you shouldn't be doing some of this stuff. And if you aspire to those goals, this is some other stuff you've got to do. And, you know, okay, I didn't agree with all of it. And I know I'm a compulsive shopper, but, you know, it's okay, you know. But you know, I think that can is not about absolutes. Can is about an attitude. And I think the great brands figure that out. Does Coke make you happy? Give me a freaking break. No, but I get the idea, right? Coke wants to be there when I'm happy, and they want to insert themselves into my life when I'm planning and thinking about moments like that. That's cool with me. And that's what makes brands great. And I think one of the most exciting things for me about this campaign, I'll be really honest with you, over the past 10 years, I'd become really cynical about the value of TVCs and print and stuff. And it really restored my faith, because as we got out and we showed people a campaign, they were like, that is really, really, really inspiring.
Because interestingly, although we saw the TVC there, you actually launched with print work. It was in the
mainly out of home. mainly out of home, which was a big insight we took away, was that, you know, out of home and radio were highly undervalued.
And the Sunday newspapers was where you
rolled it on the Sunday. But you know that, you know, it's there's a lot of work that goes into building a campaign like that, right? It's not sort of like, oh, that looks pretty good. Yeah, we should roll with that, you know.
And where do you go from here with the campaign?
Oh, we're going in a lot of directions. I mean, I don't know how many of you have seen the product work. One of the things we heard from the customers was, you know, we love the Toni Collette piece. We love all of that. Don't do it for too long. You got to pay it. I really want to know now. Already, I want to know, what do you do? So we've rolled out the concierge, TBC. We've rolled out and print. And we've got more proof. We're rotating a lot of the billboards and banners out now into more tangible proof points.
Now, something that interested me when you launched the Cannes campaign is you went to a lot of trouble in a very busy week to brief the trade press. You know, you did a special briefing.
Yeah, apparently that doesn't happen down here.
Yeah, and
that's really common in the US, right? In the US, what you would do if you were launching a big brand campaign is you would, you know, you go to New York or San Fran and you get all of the major press and you sort of debut the campaign to them and really take them through the inner workings of it and what we're doing internally and show everyone the workings so they understand the scope of what you're doing. And yeah, so we did that. And when I first said I was going to do it for the MNC team, they're like, are you nuts? Like, no one does that. I'm like, really? Yeah. They do it in the US, so why don't we just do it and see what happens? And so, yeah.
Does it matter to you what the industry thinks of the work of the strategy?
No.
Why bother?
I don't give a shit. Oh, because you're nice guys and I like hanging out with you. So, I'm always interested in everyone's opinion, right? I'm always interested in, and what I'm interested in is informed opinions, right? And I was sitting down with a competitor of yours last night from the Sydney Morning Herald, and we had a really good discussion about the campaign, and he had a lot of really good insights and thoughts for me about different things, right? And his perspective matters, like your perspective matters to me. So that's why I do it. But I think that one of the problems we've got, one of the problems you guys have specifically, is, and it's the same for all social media, is anonymity breeds irresponsibility. And the mindless chatter and drivel, you know, dominates actually really good, thoughtful insights and comments. And how do we pass the social conversation to separate out the mindless drivel and nonsense and people who think that we or Tourism Centre actually don't do any research and think through these things, you know, from people who actually have genuine comments and actually good points. I know there are negatives about the campaign. I know it's not perfect. I know there are things that people won't like. And I'm interested in hearing those perspectives. I really am. And they challenge us to be better. And they keep us on our toes, so that's a good thing.
Now you blog personally.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you do with anonymous comments on your blog?
I don't. I don't care if they're anonymous, and you know, and I find I actually get a lot of good comments and thoughtful things. Mostly people don't comment on your blog very much, but you get a lot of thoughtful comments and stuff. The ones that are full of puerile nonsense and, you know, foul language, I take down, not because I care, but mainly because my 7-year-old daughter somehow likes to look at my blog, see what people are up to. So I don't really mind. The reason I blog is I actually really like writing. So I actually find it kind of almost meditative to sit down and write and think through things. And I actually have found that I've met so many really interesting people through my blog that it's just a fantastic connector to interesting people. So I like that.
Just so people can find it, the Daily Lark.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, in a few minutes we'll take questions, so do start to have a bit of a think. We're doing a student stream today. There's well over 100 students in the room. Are the universities putting people out ready to be the data-driven marketer of tomorrow?
No. You look at most of the marketing degrees, and if you're doing a marketing degree or a whatever degree you're doing at university, unfortunately, you're going to have to hang out with the math guys and girls and scientists and learn about data and data modeling and mining and all that kind of stuff, because that's going to be a big part of the future. But I think as a whole, a lot of the graduates I get to meet and interview are really talented, really good. I'm really encouraged by that. But the future is going to be very different than today.
What's your advice to people who sort of say, you know, I work somewhere, and you often see that someone comes along to a conference like this, and they're the one person in the department is kind of interested in digital or whatever.
Or social is or the other social, one I get all the time in emails. Like, I work at a company and we're kind of old and a bit tired and I'm trying to convince my bosses of social and blah, 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 and they don't really get it. Mm. Any thoughts?
You know? And what is your advice?
So I have two schools of advice. First of all, present them with lots of examples and case studies of what other people are doing in the industry and ask the question, why aren't we doing this? I'd love to do this for us. Build examples of how you can actually impact the business. Look to do small things, not big things, and go for small wins and get the train going. Look to partner with your agencies, because your agencies are often really good at selling things in around people and then through things. And if all else fails, just leave. Just leave.
You mean that seriously?
I do. Life is short. Life is short. Miserably short. Right? Don't waste your time working somewhere that doesn't inspire you and motivate you and energize with you. Don't work for assholes. Leave. Go work somewhere with someone that really wants to inspire and motivate you and is doing the kind of work you want to be. So now, there is an equal bunch of people who are quite happy to go work somewhere that outputs the odd print ad and, you know, his boss likes to write all the copy, and that's cool. Good for them too. So, make sure you pick a place to be that really reflects you. It's funny, I was talking to some interns, graduates the other day, and they sort of asked me a very similar...
I always get those two words.
Yeah. They asked me a really interesting question the other day, and the same sort of question, and I said, listen, if you're on a date with someone, and I haven't done this in a while, but if you're out on a date with someone and you don't like them, and they don't really reflect your beliefs or who you are, what do? You leave. Why would you then spend the other 40, 50 hours of your week not leaving? Yeah, it's just, I know it's harder than that. No, you've got to have money and all that stuff, but there are plenty of people out there hiring. It is bloody hard to find good marketing people.
Well, let's turn to the floor at this point. Would anyone like to throw in a question? At this point, excuse me for appearing. I think I can see a hand over there. If we get one of the roving microphones to you. When we get the microphone to you, if you could tell us who you are and where you're from, please.
Adam Joseph, Growth Solutions Group. Andy, I was reading an interview in the trade press with you, and you said that you're not interested in winning awards. It's all about the balance sheet. And I was wondering if you could elaborate. Are you referring to brand valuation, as in the recent Millward Brown Brands report, or are you talking about customer acquisition, as with NAB claiming 650,000 as a result of the breakup?
So really, really good question. So, look, we measure our marketing performance on three key metrics. One called brand health, which does look at things like Millward Brown. It looks at the health of the brand against key reputational attributes and product attributes that we seek to own in the market. We look at brand momentum, which I think is actually a really important metric that marketers don't look hard enough at, and that looks at the velocity of the brand in the sales funnel. So, for instance, you can win the awareness war up front, and then you do really lousy search with Google, and you lose all the customers, right? And then we look at employee engagement. And I think that, you know, I listened a long time ago to Jack Immelt from GE speaking at a conference. He was asked, why do you advertise? And he said, it's the most efficient way for me to speak to 100,000 employees, right? And I think we far too often lose sight of the fact that our ads inspire 48,000 people every single day in their jobs, and that has to actually be the first thing we do as marketers. Because if they're not inspired, no matter how much marketing you do, you're just tipping dollars down the drain. So that's that. Second thing is you have to understand what the business metric is. Acquisition of MFI customers, the 630,000 you mentioned, is an absolutely appalling number to measure. Because I could get there tomorrow with no brand campaign. Just price to win. That's what other people have done. That's fine. If that's their strategy, that's fine. You have to look at return on equity in this as a financial institution. So we look at return on equity.
So explain the difference between return on equity.
Return on equity is basically what return do we have on the dollars we're putting into the business. So, you know, and the dollars that we're storing on behalf of others. And so, you know, we look at much more fundamental financial metrics and say, is the brand influencing those metrics and driving those metrics in the right direction? And so I think that I think one of the biggest challenges we've got as marketers, and we're lousy at investing in it, and I'm trying to pour more and more money into it, is how do we raise the commercial acumen of marketers to understand how the CFO looks at the balance sheet and drives the performance, and how do your biggest, most important investors comprehend your performance? Because I could sit around all day talking about MFI customers, but I know some of the most important industry analysts and analysts in the market that follow us, they think that's an absolutely terrible metric to look at. You know, they're like, no, focus on return on equity. Whatever you do, do not do what others have done and try and price to win share at any cost, right? So I think looking at and understanding what are your marketing metrics and then being very clear on the commercial acumen around the business metrics is what you've got to really focus on.
Let's take another question from the floor. I can see a hand over there. And again, if you could tell us who you are and where you're from.
So I'm Nancy. I'm from the University of Sydney Business School. I do have a banking background with an online bank, ING Direct. So when I saw this campaign, I was quite intrigued as to where you were heading with it. And from my experience and what I'm hearing and feeling is that as consumers, the two important P's are price and product. And I guess maybe as banking consumers, I guess what I'm interested to see is how that will follow through with the campaign.
So those are absolutely not the principal drivers for consumers today in the market. We thought they were the drivers ourselves. We believed that. What we discovered is the two principal drivers today in the major acquisition, profitable acquisition zones in the market were not those. They came down to ability to give me sound advice matched with great service. Okay. Was a big deal. Like, how do you actually provide great service with sound advice? So people, in short, mattered a whole lot in the equation, right? Which is why the concierge, what you've got to do is you've got to separate out what's important, so product and price are important, from what motivates. That's the beauty of that piece of research. And what we found was, hey, you can be within this price delta, and as long as you're in that price delta, then I'll buy your product. Okay, and as long as your product has these kinds of features, then you're in it. We heard time and time again, for instance, from customers, you know, stop talking about safe and secure. I kind of get that, right? Stop talking about price. I know you're in the price window, and I know if I turn up and push you really hard, I can probably get a better deal, right? So those are important, but they're not motivators. And what we discovered actually was really intriguing was that people really mattered, and technology really mattered, and that more and more financial decisions were actually being motivated by the technology capability you could bring to the relationship. And I think that's a huge challenge for marketers, because if budgets are all flat and not going up, how the hell do you build all these apps? How do you build new generations of products? And so basically that means you have to drain the funds from somewhere. You have to be more efficient, more productive, move dollars around. So. Well, you know, in summary, what I'd say is, well, I'm not disputing that price and product are important. They clearly are important. And sort of watching rates seems to be a national pastime down here. But, and that's all cool, but they are not the motivators. And I think when you look at a brand, you've got to look at not just what's important, but what are the motivators? And what would cause someone to do something? Remember, less than 1% of the market changes financial institutions on an annual basis. That's staggering, right? That is staggering brand loyalty. So, big challenge.
What are your own personal media consumption habits?
Oh, I'm a media junkie. I've found that my reading of newspapers has dropped off precipitously in this country because they insist on sealing them in impenetrable cellophane and rolling them into little tight balls that don't lay flat. So I've actually cancelled all my newspaper subscriptions, and I just walk down to the newsagent and buy them now, much to my wife's relief, because they're normally just stacked up on the lawn. I'm just voracious, so I live in my Google Reader. I've got hundreds of feeds in there. I read, like you guys all do, all your apps on the iPad, and Sydney Morning Herald, AFR, The Mall, Telegraph, Herald Hunt, Herald Sun, the whole lot. I think you have to be intrigued with media. I guess my favorite magazines down here are Dumbo Feather,
it seems like that's brilliant. A specialist choice.
Yeah. I mean, what have they got, a circulation of 8,000?
How did you discover it?
Oh, a friend gave it to me. In fact, they're old, for those of you, how many of you have read Dumbo Feather? You know, fantastic, right? Just fantastic. Their headline used to be Dumbo Feather, Pass It On. And the whole principle is you're meant to pass it on, but no one ever did. They're like collectibles. It was like, it was the standard joke amongst Dumbo Feather readers was, in any divorce, you can have anything you want, but I'm taking the Dumbo Feathers, you know. But it's a really great mag, so I like that one. And the magazine publishing down this end of the world is just beautiful. I mean, particularly the stuff I get out of New Zealand, you know, Urbis, Life and Leisure, Here, Habitat. I'm kind of a junkie for that kind of stuff, yeah.
Let's take another question from the floor. I can see a hand right
there's
in the middle.
There's one over here's got a question.
Oh, yes. I am neglecting this side of the room, so I'll let you patrol that side of the room, and I'll do this one. Wherever the hand was over there.
Yes, Andrew Staback from Australian Banking and Finance Magazine, publisher of. Thank you, Andy, for your positive comments about magazines in Australia. Are you self-deprecating? Because you played down the role of the CMO early on in your speech, and to me, you've just now highlighted all the reasons why a CMO, particularly a large financial institution, is so powerful, has such an important job to do, and can make a difference, particularly for the 45,000-50,000 people that that you're inspiring now. Was that just deliberately to play that down?
It's a fair question, and I want to be absolutely blindingly clear on this, is that I just don't matter. At best, I'm a cheerleader for the team. I sort all kinds of crap out for them. I get all kinds of walls busted down for them. I'm there to help my team get their job done. I have an absolutely astoundingly good team, and they deserve all the credit for that campaign. They built it, they ran it with MNC. I'm lucky enough to be there cheerleading and along for the ride, right? There's one of me, there's hundreds of them. And this sort of cult of the CMO is just garbage, right? Don't get me wrong, mate, you've got a big role to play in lighting fires and inspiring people and setting the tone and dealing with the, you know, CEO, the board, and all the other executives. But one thing I would say to any graduate in the audience here is pay careful attention and really figure out how you can understand the culture of the company you're about to join, right? Because culture matters. And the reason that campaign and products like Kaching get to market at CBA is because of the culture. It's not because of the CMO. The culture works brilliantly, and the culture is vibrant, and it's, you know, collaborative, and people get together and move things forward, which is just great, you know.
So the second part to the question is, how can we get more marketers much better at marketing financial services? Because in the past, it's been like oil and water. You've cracked it here. There's no question about that. I'm inspired by the campaign. But how do we get marketers much better at marketing financial services, which is such a large part of our economy, affects all of our lives, all the way through our lives?
I think that the leaders, the CMOs, the heads of marketing, as a whole, we need to have, while maintaining the intense competitiveness of the market, because, man, we're all out to eat each other's lunch, right? We need to understand that if we insist on standing on each other's shoulders all the time, you know, we could end up all being very small. And we actually have to pioneer ourselves, our brands. We don't need to pioneer it on the basis of other people's brands. So there's a certain, you know, lack of sort of willingness to blaze your own path, as opposed to kicking the shit out of everyone else. It's really hard to hire good people into that environment. And it's really hard to inspire thoughtful marketing based on data and insights and research with that kind of approach. Because it's dead easy to take a mallet to any competitor, right? A great example of this is AirAsia. AirAsia is an amazing marketing story. Tony Fernandes is probably the greatest marketer in the world today, I think. And what Tony's done so brilliantly is he started with the contender strategy. So he picked a fight with Singapore Airlines in particular. But he quickly diversified and stepped away from that into a very compelling value proposition powered by technology, powered by price, powered by product, and very inspirational. And what is it 10 years now, he's built the third largest airline in the world. I mean, that's just unbelievable, right? But he quickly got the strategy right, and I think it would have been really hard for him to continue to be, just a contender brand. I think that's what we've got to do in financial services. We need to pioneer real marketing literacy and real commercial literacy, and real courage and conviction to pursue brands based on, you know, what it does for the front line and real research and data.
Peter Miller from AdStream. I'm just interested in your relationship with the head of people and culture at the bank, because obviously the follow-up experience that people have, people still go into shops, still go into the bank. I do. Yeah. I've been buying my kids a lot of foreign currency lately. And the whole concierge experience is, frankly, very good. I reckon that's the next big job. Do you work closely, you know, on that whole project?
Yeah, we do. We work really closely in sort of defining the service elements of the culture. Here's a little insight for you, and this comes back to my earlier comment for agencies or marketers. One of the key metrics for us as marketers is we have an internal service survey called ICSM, and that measures the number of business partners across our business that rate us 9 out of 10 or 10 out of 10 for responding to their needs and addressing the business, the needs of the business, right? And that is a fanatically driven competition amongst the marketing teams. And so it's not just how we drive people and culture to the branch face and the call face, but right into our call center, where we have over 300,000 calls a day going in. So, for instance, when we launch this campaign, you know, we'll sit and start coding in weeks in advance all the voice analytics. And what's really interesting, 46% of customers come in with a can't statement, like I can't see my balance, or I can't figure out where the money went, or I can't figure out why I don't have enough money to pay the rent, or whatever their can't statement be. To 96% of them, we use the can word. Fascinating, right? When you actually go probe data in real time at the front line. And so, yeah, it's a big part of what we do. That service promise is a huge part of our brand, and that's what can is really meant to be about.
Now we're running slightly late. We've probably got time for maybe one or perhaps two
There's
more questions.
There's 6 minutes left, mate.
I'm building up the drama. You've lifted the curtain.
Oh, right.
Okay. we'll go to one, if there was another one over this side, as I do feel I've been neglecting.
You have, really.
Hi, Fergus Stoddart from Edge. First of all, congratulations on a great campaign. I've listened to you a couple of times at other events, and I know you've always been big on purpose brand, yeah. And it sounds like you've found the purpose. The other thing that you've always talked about is your big belief in content marketing, and I'm interested in how you follow through with this big campaign on a content play.
So we're working really hard on that right now without giving too much away. I think the one thing we really underestimated on this campaign would be the response we got from Middle Australia. We have had literally thousands and thousands of schools inundating us with requests for, can you send me 100 copies of the poem to give out to students? Can I get a copy of the video to read out at school? Is it okay if we show it at school? And you're just like, wow, I never thought that would happen. I had a hospital administrator call me yesterday on my mobile. I have no idea how they found my phone number. Just thought the Telegraph might have published it for something. And saying, hey, look, you know, we have a big cancer ward here, and a woman flagged your ad because there's a line in there about can't find a cure. And can we get copies of the poem to hand out? And you're just kind of like, shit. I had no idea that would happen, right? And we're getting literally hundreds and hundreds of photos every couple of days from people about their can't story and their can story, and kids, you know, at games going, I can score a ton in the AFL. And you just go, I had no idea. We were completely unprepared for that. And so we're busy building content around that now and content strategies around that. And, you know, it's a huge challenge because most marketers are not close to the content. Right, we're close to the process of marketing, but not close to the actual content. So when you sit, so you know, we're having every one of our marketers go and do the training so they can do a financial health check. We're having them all do the training mandatory to go work in branches for weeks at a time, so they can. And when you send a group of interns who have joined you to do marketing, and you say, by the way, you're going to be spending a month and a half in a branch, they're like, oh my god, I have to wear a uniform and a badge. And then they come back and they're like, that is the best experience I've ever had. I learned so much. And by the way, we have to fix the way our frontline sells insurance. It does not work. I tried it for 3 days and it drove me nuts. I'm going to fix that. And that's what you've got to do to get content. You've got to get people to the front line where they understand the product and the customer experience and the service experience at the front line, and then you can generate content.
Andy, and we have 2 minutes and 47 seconds left.
Oh, it went so fast.
I saw that hand first there. This might end up being the last question.
Hi there, Andy. Julian from Dynomi. I'm not with Commonwealth Bank yet, but my...
You will be soon. It's all right.
I can change.
You can.
The, the bank I'm with, I never go into their branch. I do online banking. Yep. They know a lot about me, but all they ever do is get someone to ring me every 3 months to offer me life insurance, which is off-putting. They don't target anything to me. Are you going to use the what you know about your customers to target them with more relevant products and things like that?
Absolutely. It is a huge challenge for all financial institutions of any size because the whole business is structured in silos. And so the life insurance business does their little shtick, and they may even outsource some of that to a third party. So we've become really passionate about the CAN journey for customers and how do we make that a really systemic experience based on data. And so the short answer is yes, we can do that. It's going to take us a while. Frankly, it's just really hard to find the data scientists and the people who can do that kind of data mining. Remembering that, it's funny, you'll get really smart companies. I've worked with people like Mu Sigma and Palantir, who are off the charts, brainiacs at BI, and they're like, oh, we'd love to help. That'd be a great project. I'm like, great, let's go. And they go, well, can you send me the data? I'm like, there's 8 petabytes of data. And it's not able to leave the country. That's against the law. Oh, we can't help you then. And so it's harder than it looks, but we're working on it.
I think that's where we're going to have to leave it. Please thank Andy Lark.
Thank you.
That was the Mumbrella Cast. More from Mumbrella 360 next week. Toodle-pip.